I'll preamble a little bit. So good morning, everybody. This is a work session on the Southwest Corridor project. And I'm Teresa Boyle. With me, Eric Engstrom, Art Pierce, and Shannon Callahan. We all are going to be doing pieces, perhaps, of this presentation today. But I will be doing the bulk of it. I will be talking fast. There's a lot of info to cover. I'm using acronyms, all those things that are a little challenging. And you have in front of you a PowerPoint, which I had envisioned you would actually be able to see. And so you can see it on paper. Yeah. You also have in front of you a one-pager, which you can stick in your binder later. It'll be up on the slideshow. It goes in the local match section. So we're getting together today because you have I'm on slide number two. You have a number of actions in early October coming to you related to the transit project. And in order to prepare for that, we thought it would be a good idea to get everyone together and just go through some of the elements of the transit project, the equitable housing strategy, and then some of the other interrelated elements that are part of the conversation: jurisdictional transfer, Ross Island Bridgehead, and city local match. And the council actions that I'm referring to are happening in early October. I'm on slide three. What I would recommend for this today probably is that you note places where you have questions. If I'm lucky, the presentation will have answered those by the time I get done talking. But if not, be thinking about those things that you may want additional information on between now and the council sessions themselves. So the first thing I'm going to do, and it's slide number four, is talk about Southwest Corridor, the transit project. Why are we doing this project? Why is it a good project? What's in the Portland segment, and what are in the two communities south of us? So the fifth slide, if I'm counting correctly, is the region's high-capacity transit network. And you can see from the dots along the Southwest Corridor alignment that it is the last leg of the rail high-capacity transit system. You can also see from that the dots headed out division for our division transit project that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. So basically, this is the last leg of that transit spine in and out of downtown and serving an area of our region that does not currently have that type of transit. And I am on the picture slide after that. I'm sorry, it doesn't have a number. So it says 255,000 people. That's the number of people who are currently working in the South Corridor. The next slide is the fact that we're expecting 70,000 more people in the area. Now, I think I'm off sync, sorry. 70,000 more people to move into this area. And it all leads to a great deal of people moving back and forth. We're anticipating 13 to 17 hours of congestion daily on I-5 between Portland and Tigard in 2035, which is the design year for the project. The next slide is slide number nine, project benefit, faster and more reliable. So we see one of the main benefits for this project is the ability to move people through the corridor in a way that our express bus system between Bridgeport and Portland does now at a 38-minute trip. We'll have a faster trip that actually allows people to stop in between those places, and it's also a one-seat ride because it connects the Green Line. We do see currently a number of people who are working in Portland traveling to the Tigard-Tualatin area or living in Tigard-Tualatin and traveling into Portland. So there are about 24,000 people who are already moving back and forth between those spaces. I'm on slide number 10. It's called Project Benefit, lots of riders. 43,000 rides a day on the average weekday in 2035. The next slide, Project Benefit, taking cars off roads, slide number 11. So by being able to move people onto the transit system, it is the equivalent of adding a lane worth of freeway at peak hour, which is a good thing because we're not actually adding a lane. slide after that is slide 12, sidewalks and bike lanes. So those of you who have traveled through Southwest or live in that area know that it's very poorly connected for any mode other than the auto. If you're looking at Barber Boulevard, this project would provide continuous bike lane and sidewalk between downtown Portland and Barber Transit Center. Slide number 13 relates to stormwater management. Barber is, right today, Barber water is commingled with I-5 water, and it all goes to our streams. And this particular project will add and upgrade systems and provide a much higher level of treatment. And just as kind of a measurement, for the Orange Line, we were successful in it being able to capture 1.9 million square feet of stormwater. And I would think that this project will be able to do a similar thing. So slide 14 is the alternative alignment. Basically, we'll be talking about where light rail goes and why. Slide 15. From north to south, we are basically a Barber Boulevard alignment between downtown Portland to the Barber Transit Center. That's in the center of Barber Boulevard. At Barber Transit Center, we are studying two different alignment options, both of which fly over the crossroads area where Capitol Highway and Barber Boulevard intersect. There are two different alignments of bridges, and we're evaluating both of those. So in South Portland on Barber, and now I'm on slide 16, this was the place where we were talking about the differences between Barber and NATO. And Barber has the shortest connection up to Markham Hill. It was a faster travel time. It actually had fewer property impacts than the widening of NATO to include light rail. And we've noted on the slide that Ross Island Bridgehead improvements are something that we consider to be a must-do.
What does that mean?
So,
because it's been a must-do, I think, for as long as I've lived here, which is 32 years.
This is a real must-do.
When must do?
So the idea, and I'll have a section on this, but the idea is that we lift this project in parallel and in conjunction with the light rail project. Thank you. So slide 17 is simply a nice little rendering that shows kind of that proximity. You can imagine a station down on Barber Boulevard where underneath the tram wires and that connectivity between Markham Hill, South Waterfront, and then people being able to move back and forth. It's a tremendous connection from people who are traveling for jobs and also for education. Slide 18 is a rendering of a connection to Markham Hill. This is an elevator and stair concept with a walkway that would land at Terwilliger with a subsequent connection up to the hospital, and a rendering of a station at Gibbs that shows its proximate relationship to that crossing. 19 is a shared transitway. So those of you who use the Orange Line or ride buses over to Inner East Side may be aware that the buses and trains share the Tillicum Crossing, and they share the same travel path from NATO Parkway over through to OMSI. And it's a way of providing faster bus service, actually, in conjunction with the light rail, because it's not interrupted by regular traffic. So this concept would bring buses through from Southwest, through Hillsdale, down onto the light rail transitway into downtown. So in and out, there's a nice connection there. Slide 20 is what we call the Woods section, the section with the two aging viaducts. The project will be replacing those viaducts and adding adequate pedestrian and bicycle facilities, retaining the auto lanes and adding transit to them. Slide number 21 is the central section of Barber. So this is approximately from Fred Meyer's to the Barber Transit Center. Again, we'll be in the middle of Barber, not on I-5. This allowed us to have the most easily accessed stations and the ones with the highest visibility. We would have stations at 13th, 19th, 30th, and Barber Transit Center. Again, new sidewalks and bike lanes and more regular signalized crossings. This alignment actually had fewer residential displacements than the I-5. The next slide, 22, is a rendering of what a station could look like at Southwest 19th. The Safeway on your right, we're looking west. Slide 23 is a look at Barber Transit Center, again in a rendering format. This is the looking west from there. Barber Transit Center is in the foreground, the blocks of buildings with cars. Light rail is between the transit center and I-5. And this alignment shows a bridge that crosses over I-5 and then crosses over Capitol Highway to run adjacent to I-5. So that's one of the alignments we're looking at there. Slide 24 is the, what I call the west section of Barber, the outbound section. It's probably technically not quite correct in terms of the compass, but it's easier for me to think of west. So in this case, once we leave Barber Transit Center and go to the city limits, we know we'll be adjacent to I-5. And in either the alignment that is in the rendering that I showed you or the one that we will be evaluating that parallels Taylor's Ferry Road, they both cross over I-5, cross over that area to connect, and then run adjacent to I-5 to a station at Southwest 53rd. 53rd is an opportunity location for us in terms of having a large park and ride, and there's a great connection to PCC at that point.
Do you want us to save questions or to ask them as well?
I would love it if you could hold them. I'm trying to kind of rattle through this. Do write them down for me, please. Thank you. Slide 25, one of the project benefits that we will be recognizing and realizing is that of infrastructure. We get a improved road that comes along with the transit. We have light rail stations with improved connections, a complete street, bike lanes, sidewalks, stormwater, and the connector to Markham Hill and a shuttle connection to PCC. Slide 26 is my sole slide about Tigard and Tualatin. I am short on time today. But this project does good things in Tigard and Tualatin as well. It supports the growth that Tigard is looking for in what they call their triangle area. We're able to make connections to transit in downtown Tigard. As we talked about before, there's a tremendous amount of job opportunity in Tigard and Tualatin. The project ends with a large park and ride at Bridgeport Village. Slide 27 is the what's next slide. This is the what's next in 2019. So the design team is hard at work doing additional analyses on not just design refinements like the idea of an alignment that goes around Taylor's Ferry, but also really digging in a little more and looking at further at what the Markham Hill connection would be like, what the stations will look like and park and rides. It's all leading to completion of a final environmental impact statement in the summer of 2019. Slide 28 is the big picture slide. So we are here in 2019. We'll be here in 2019 doing the project work and the completion of the FEIS. I flagged for you early in 2020. That's the time frame at which Portland is expected to commit its share of local match. In 2020, we're anticipating there will be a regional funding measure that will be happening in late 2020, and then assuming everything continues to move forward with the federal government, we'd be out to construction in 2021 and open in 2027. All right, I'm going to pause, take a drink of water. Thank you all for being so patient. Jurisdictional transfer. It's an intergovernmental agreement with ODOT. Currently, the Barber Boulevard Highway 99 corridor is ODOT's, and our standards simply are a little different in terms of operations, and we all believe that in order to add light rail to Highway 99, it should transfer to the city for operations. This is the same thing we did on Interstate Avenue for the Yellow Line portion. Slide 31, jurisdictional transfer, will be coming in October 10th with a request that we execute an IGA with ODOT. And what this intergovernmental agreement really will be doing is identifying the terms under which we can complete the transfer. It has a stormwater MOU that outlines some of the work that we'll be doing between now and completion of preliminary design on the existing stormwater system. It talks about a future transfer of NATO to accommodate the Ross Island Bridgehead, and ODOT provides $65 million to go toward replacing the viaducts. So this JT is a little unusual in that it is predicated on the light rail project receiving federal funding. If the project does not fund, we will not complete the transfer. We won't affect it. The light rail project is the thing that brings the level of improvements that we would need to make it a healthy transfer for ourselves and for ODOT. So there will be a point right now, we think it's the summer of 2023, where we'll know whether or not that transfer will be made. Ross Island Bridgehead, the project. I'm on slide 33. So, Commissioner Fritz, as you noted, we've been talking about Ross Island connections through the neighborhood and into Portland for quite a long time. I was just out of high school in 1978, so this happened a long time ago. I am old, but this happened a long time ago. The first Portland circulation study. We have a number of times looked for ways and methods to improve connections to the Ross Island Bridge. And the reality of a light rail project on Barber is that it would not remove those existing ramp routes. That's not an FTA type of improvement. So the project steering committee has endorsed all of us pursuing the bridgehead improvements as a parallel project in conjunction with light rail. Staff, BPS and PBOT staff, began to really contemplate what light rail on Barber might mean when it appeared that this was where the route proposal was going. We developed an evaluation of the area and really began to look at, well, what would happen if there were light rail on Barber? Are there benefits that could accrue? And I'm on slide 35. So if we are able to lift Ross Island Bridgehead as a project, while the light rail project's going on, we get to do a tremendous number of things. We're able to provide regular crossings of NATO. We can put sidewalks and bike lanes on NATO. NATO basically becomes a city boulevard instead of a remnant freeway. But one of the most exciting things for us is it creates land, which you don't get to do very often. We believe there will be opportunities to build housing in the spaces that the existing ramps occupy. And it also is great from a traffic perspective, probably one of the best things we can do to provide connectivity for US 26 west to east and better access to and from I-5 and from Barber itself. Slide 36. So the Gibbs Station is going to be a very busy station, and it'll be akin to the type of activity that happens right now in the Rose Quarter Transit Center. And really, we anticipate a lot of people moving through the area on foot. And so being able to get to NATO from Gibbs, from that area, is important. So slide 37 is just a quick rendering of how a station up on Barber would look if you're, all right, if you're a bird on NATO looking west. That would be what that would look like. Slide 38 really is one of the exciting moments. So, again, we're doing land creation. In looking on the entirety of the corridor along NATO, we have identified that there is a fair amount of vacant and underutilized land. But the area down in blue, housing capacity due to ramp removal, we think there's room for 350 to 400 units of housing. And really, what a great location to put it. Slide 39 and 40 are really just trying to show you the difference in the routing for the first slide. 39 is US 26 east and west. The yellow is what you do now, getting onto and off of the bridge. The blue is what you would do in the future. So you can see that that all really just stays north of the neighborhood. Ross Island Bridge, everything's south of Ross Island Bridge. The connections to the Ross Island Bridge from Barber Boulevard, if you're heading north on Barber into town, right now there's just one lane that gets onto the bridge, and there would be two. the connection after that that I'm showing is also the I-5. The next is the I-5 connections. So currently, when you get off of I-5, you wind your way through the neighborhood to get to the bridge, and we have found a way to accommodate that with a much more direct route that stays off of the local street network. Those are really big wins for this neighborhood and for all of us in terms of connectivity, in terms of traffic flow from I-5 getting to the bridge. Slide 41 is a brief overview of city local match contribution. So you have a piece of paper in front of you, a table that is not in your binder, and it would have been, except for I didn't finish it till Friday. So you can insert it if you like. This is a history of the city's contributions toward the transit project, starting with Banfield, the original blue. And really, this is just intended to show you that there's quite a patchwork of funding that we have put together over time in order to pay our share of the entire system. So we have this history of contributing to every project except for Wes, which was not in our area. And slide number, the next slide is funding for this particular project and a table that shows potential revenue sources. I've highlighted the line that says other local, state, and regional funds. That's us. And right now, we are all anticipating that we will be asked to contribute something in the realm of $75 to $80 million for the $2.6 to $2.8 billion project. Knowing that, you can go to slide 44. PBOT convened with the help and support of the P&D directors, convened a committee starting in early 2017 to start talking about how the heck we'd find that much money. And we had developed some concepts. We'll be asking you when we come to council for the light rail project to direct us to continue that development and basically be ready to bring you a strategy so that we can commit in 2020 to stay on schedule. The famous funnel slide is the next slide. We started out as a group brainstorming all the possible sources short of coins in the couch cushions that we could think of to fund the project, and went through a narrowing process, an evaluation process with using kind of a go-no-go matrix. We came down to the four sources that we thought would be the most likely, and we stopped work on those. My next slide will show those. We also identified our own priorities for the corridor. What are the things we need to see? What are the things we want to have happen along with this great transit resource that we want to have happen? So slide 46 is the most likely sources. You have a summary. That little picture that you can't read is in your binder. It's the summary of the sources, so that if you wake up in the middle of the night and you're thinking of a new source, you can check there first and see if we thought of it, and if not, let us know. We'll throw it in the mix. But basically, the most likely sources that we have identified so far: transportation SDCs, urban renewal funds, donation of city land, and potentially partnership around stormwater facilities that BES may already be looking to do as part of their own capital improvement program. Let me go back. Donation of city land. So for the orange line, we were able to identify $5 million in properties that were actually in city ownership that the light rail project would need to use. And so rather than it being a purchase that was a project expense, we were able to donate those as part of our match. I don't think there is a lot of likelihood for land donation along this alignment, but I haven't done an exhaustive search. It's just a concept. We're not at a strategy yet. I am almost done with my talking. The slide 47, though, is one that you would have seen when we came and talked about Division Transit a couple of weeks ago. It's helpful. our next topic will be talking about the equitable housing strategy and really what we are looking for. This is the pie slice that shows where people's expenses are, and housing and transportation really are those two that take a bulk of people's funds. And so our opportunity to talk about a transit project in conjunction with housing is the way to go to try to manage that. And that's the end of my piece of this.
So I have to turn it on. My name is Eric Engstrom with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and I'm going to start off the housing strategy slides and then tag team with Shannon Callahan with the Housing Bureau. The first slide, 48, is just a visualization to get the conversation started. This is at the cross from the Barber Transit Center. It looks very different than today. There's almost no buildings visible if you were standing on that, on the absence of a sidewalk that's there today. The light rail project is very important from a housing and growth management perspective. In the absence, or historically, Southwest Portland has been taking less than I think its share of growth over the years, and the Southwest Corridor is a mechanism that allows us to catalyze the corridor and even that out a little bit. With the transit system improvement, we will be substantially expanding access to housing, education, and job opportunities, and that's a good thing. At the same time, communities of color are growing in the Southwest Corridor, creating more racially integrated and diverse population, which make up 21% of the population. But that population is increasing at about 2.5% per year over the last 5 years, which is three times faster than the change in the white population in the Southwest Corridor. So it's diversifying. We know that displacement risk is there, and lack of affordable housing threatens the existing economic and cultural diversity. Historically, people of color, immigrants, and renters have been impacted disproportionately by displacement pressures. Displacement of those populations to the suburbs also creates obstacles to achieving our growth plans, and it causes the loss of core riders for TriMet, which is working against the purpose of the transit system as a whole. We want to get ahead of that speculation and market pressure and ensure that we're building housing choices that are there when the light rail comes. So with this housing strategy, we teamed up with the City of Tigard and, of course, with the Housing Bureau and BPS on the City of Portland side to look at a strategic approach for the whole corridor. It lays out a roadmap to achieve our goals with those partners. It's important to understand that this is not – sometimes we do strategies where we already have the money and we're just telling you what the best way to spend it, and this is not one of those. This is a strategy of where we might bring new resources to the table and what our best leads to do that are, and then we talk about – what to do with that money, but it's both how do we bring more resources to bear and what's the best way to improve the housing situation in the corridor. So I'm now on moving to slide 50, I believe. So this work is nested within Metro's Southwest Equitable Development Strategy, or SWEDS, and it was highly coordinated with the light rail planning process. And as the light rail plan continues, so will Metro's planning for equitable development with an emphasis on workforce and economic development. And Portland and Tigard will continue to participate in this planning while we're also beginning to implement the priorities in the housing strategy. So the SWEDS was including workforce development, economic development, and housing, and this housing strategy with Portland and Tigard is a component of that. I want to just appreciate Metro for stepping forward not only to fund this planning work and a share of this housing strategy, but also for referring the regional housing bond to the ballot this fall. The diagram attempts to show the relationships of the complex suite of committees that exist for the steering of the light rail project as well as the Southwest Equitable Development Strategy and the housing strategy. So we tried not to create new committees. We shared committees and worked through those together with Metro and with Tigard. So moving to slide 51. The housing strategy was informed by an advisory group of leaders from government, community development, finance, philanthropy and real estate development. And I want to thank our advisory group and other experts who have worked with us over the past year and a half to develop and vet these recommendations. The advisory group endorsed the strategy in June, and I should also mention that the city of Tigard accepted the strategy in August. This was not just a staff writing down our ideas. We worked with national experts and organizations that work directly in the corridor, as well as national organizations. This included Enterprise Community Partners. We had Eco Northwest working with us, Community Partners for Affordable Housing, which is based in the corridor. Meyer Memorial Trust was involved. The Housing Development Center did some work for us. Community Alliance of Tenants was involved and did some work as well. The community-based organizations engaged hundreds of low-income households to ensure their priorities and understand how to address their near-term housing crisis through the strategy. The Community Alliance of Tenants led a tenant leadership cohort, which is what the slide is a picture of. Moving on to slide 52. This graph shows the percent of regulated affordable housing within a half a mile of all the MAX stations. And the Southwest Corridor, if built, would be the light rail with the least amount of regulated affordable housing currently. Only 3.5% of multifamily housing is regulated in the corridor, compared to 14% citywide. And that's largely due to the fact that there's not a dedicated urban renewal funding in this corridor currently, where there has been in the other corridors. And as you know, a large share of our regulated affordable housing is centered in the central city where there's multiple rail lines. So we'll need to increase our investment in this corridor over what we've spent. We've spent about $16 million through locally controlled TOOs, most of which $13 million came from housing vouchers, and that's what's been spent in the corridor historically. So moving to slide 53. This is a map, and we partnered with PSU to analyze the existing stock of unregulated affordable housing, otherwise known as naturally occurring affordable housing. PSU identified over 300 buildings in the corridor, and this is in both Tigard and Portland, and 11,000 units that are currently affordable but vulnerable to speculation if rent goes up. The darker orange areas on the map show the percent higher percentage of people of color in the corridor, and the green dot and yellow dots are the sales of the older affordable buildings since 2010. So there's definitely been an increase in sales of those buildings in recent years. They found that these buildings are selling and rents are rising, especially in areas with that I mentioned how the corridor has diversified in the last 5 years, that these are the same places where these building sales are occurring. So that's a threat to that increased diversity. And especially in those tracks where, which we've identified as sort of the core, the generators of the need for the housing strategy, there's four or five census tracts that represent the bulk of that need. And those census tracts, 31% of the population are people of color. The next slide is a chart showing how building sales and rent are tracking together over since 2010, and the two are related as buildings turn over, people reinvest in them, and they raise the rent. Slide 55, talk about the needs analysis. And I think there's a part of that slide that did not print out. Or an image that somehow dropped off in the translation here. I'll talk about it anyway. So the need was calculated by looking at both existing households in the corridor who are paying more than 50% of their share on housing, which is nearly 2,000 renter households in Portland. And then we also looked at the future need by looking at the projected growth over the next 20 years from our comprehensive plan analysis. And we estimated the income distribution of those future households along those same lines and came up with a potential future need of an additional 1,200 households in Portland. And again, these goals or need statements were developed for both Tigard and Portland and the corridor as a whole. So the the table is a little bit complex because it's dealing with both cities and both existing and new households. And you'd see how complex it was if we'll get you a printed version because this isn't the whole table. Slide 56. So after looking at the actual need, Portland Housing Bureau and Tigard worked with our stakeholders to set minimum housing targets based on existing financial constraints. And those are a great start that will more than double the current inventory of regulated units in the corridor. And Shannon will talk through more of that in a few moments. The stretch targets are designed to achieve the larger policy goal of creating affordable choices at each station and preventing displacement. And we call this a 10 by 10 strategy, which is one new regulated affordable building at each of the 10 stations that have residential zoning, and again, both Tigard and Portland. And then an equal number of acquisitions where there's the highest displacement risk where those existing buildings are. So that's the stretch goal. And again, to be clear, that we don't currently have the resources to meet that goal.
Eric, I'm sorry, I just need a clarification. So the 4,240, is that the number we're... Yeah.
Yes.
Did you say that there are existing units included in this total, or these are all additional units?
No, the need is both existing units that are vulnerable to displacement and the new units that would be needed, and we'll talk about how that's broken down.
Thank you.
So the next, also worth mentioning that the need is higher than what we've set the stretch targets to, and the advisory committee was comfortable with that, realizing the needs citywide and what else we have to deal with. So the chart shows both the basic goal, the stretch goal, and the full need. Moving to the next strategy, 57, this outlines the components of the housing strategy. Council asked us to develop a strategy that can work, and as I mentioned already, that reflects nationwide best practices and prioritizes the needs of those already living in the corridor who have been working with us. It's a 10-year plan, so we were aiming for 2019 through 2029, so the bulk of the housing strategy is occurring before the light rail opens with a little bit of overlap. There are three major components, one being commit and grow new resources, two, prevent displacement of vulnerable households, and then three, increase the choices. And in your handout, which is in the final tab of the binder, there's a more full list on the inside page of which actions occur with each of those strategies. So the advisory group was consistently asking us, how are we doing things differently this time compared to past actions? And I think the major indicators there is, are we able to capitalize the strategy over the next year and commit new resources? And then are we supporting partners to continue their work with us in an accountable relationship? So that's not just seen as the city's strategy, that there's a collaboration with the partners. The last slide that I'm going to talk about before I turn it over to Shannon is just the sequencing strategy, and it's important to understand that we're trying to have an impact before the light rail opens, and so there's early funding needed to address existing buildings that are vulnerable to displacement and land banking. Later, additional funds will be needed for construction on that land and refinancing of any acquisitions that occur. But the immediate need is for those existing buildings to avoid displacement and for land. There's also regulations and resources for services, tenant protections, and community partnerships that are critical in terms of funding, and we'll get into that in a little bit. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Shannon to give a little more details on some of those key early actions that you would be involved with and that we need from other partners.
Commissioner Shannon Callahan of the Portland Housing Bureau. Before I begin, I just wanted to say that this strategy, the Equitable Housing Strategy. It really is the culmination of an unparalleled partnership to address housing and transportation in tandem as we look to create the new light rail line. And with careful planning efforts, securing new sites for development and targeted efforts to really prevent and mitigate cultural displacement. The strategy aims to achieve equitable growth along the entire corridor. I'm moving to the next little slide, which is implementing the strategy. As Eric touched on, to implement the strategy, we will need to grow resources for the long term. To do that, we've identified some potential options, including, as you've heard, the formation of a new urban renewal district, the expansion of the Metro Transit-Oriented Development Program with the impending potential Metro housing bond. We also would and have begun exploring employer-assisted housing along the corridor with PCC and OHSU, and then supporting a private and philanthropic effort to create a workforce real estate investment trust that would work citywide. Right now, Girding, Edlin, and Meyer Memorial are working on that trust, and the city has been supportive of efforts of that through the mayor's office and OMF. One of the other necessary things that the community has called out and is really a best practice as you look to plan for light rail lines is the creation of a community collaborative structure. This structure would sustain long-term regional support for affordable housing along the corridor and would work to advise our government partners as well as engage the low-income community as the development of the light rail line and affordable housing goes forward. Next, on implementing the strategy, to ensure that we're preventing residential and cultural displacement, we'll need to engage in the early acquisition of units. We've already begun seeking to acquire units along the corridor with Portland Housing housing bond funds. Additional strategies would also include capitalization of a land and property acquisition fund, such as the Network for Oregon Affordable Housing Fund. The city previously invested in this fund in 2016 with a small $1 million contribution to a larger overall fund, and NOAA was able to secure three parcels of land in Portland, one in Southwest, one in the East Side, and one in the Cully neighborhood. The strategy also calls for strengthening tenant protections both at the state and local level, as well as providing additional tenant support, legal support, tenant counseling, landlord training, and financial services, the type of work that the Housing Bureau is presently funding and the community would like us to see do additional funding, but not just targeted on the Southwest Corridor, really available citywide. And then I'm going to switch to the next slide. Okay. One of the key pieces of implementing the strategy and when it comes to the development of new affordable housing is going to be securing sites for new construction. As you've heard, the strategy calls for acquisition and creation of new housing at each one of the light rail stations. There are seven planned in the city of Portland presently. The city is currently working with TriMet and other agency partners to create a memorandum of understanding that will help enable the city to secure parcels that TriMet may need for instance, construction staging, but may not need at the end of the light rail line when it's completed. The Housing Bureau and Prosper would then plan to develop new mixed-use commercial and affordable housing on those sites. So that's really the guts of the strategy, and I know you probably have a lot of questions, and we've tried to reserve time for that.
I'll jump in more if you want to go deeper on the investment strategy in terms of the local management. Okay, we'll do some questions.
Shannon, let me ask you a question. Slide 45 has a go/no-go evaluation in our funding strategy for light rail, but I don't see the same kind of intentionality around our equitable housing strategy. And my fear is that it will once again be the stepchild that gets left behind despite good intentions. So how do we elevate the significance of the housing strategy so that it goes hand in glove with the transportation decision?
OK, Commissioner, I think that's part of the reason we're talking with you today and all of the planning that we've done in advance. I think we all think that both strategies have to go together in tandem. Obviously, I think we would change our housing strategy for the corridor if light rail were for some reason not to go forward. But we would still be planning to buy and acquire units with the present housing bond. Metro is still looking at this area if again the light rail goes forward for transit-oriented development. But the strategy would change if the light rail line were for some reason not to move forward.
I'll jump in as well. I think this is a very important question.
This is the way that we intend to do the Southwest Corridor project right. We intend to bring each of these elements along together, both the core project and the associated housing strategy. And so this is sort of part of that strategy is what you're seeing today, and I think each of the council actions that we're progressing with this fall are intended to keep our consciousness on both prizes simultaneously and make sure that we're thinking about both of them. As we're making each of these investment decisions, we need to both figure out how to invest in the core transit project itself and make sure that we're capitalizing the benefit for housing.
So the shadow of the Albina plan hangs over us, obviously, and despite best intentions, we had a successful light rail project, but we didn't meet any of the goals around housing. So I'm a little nervous about slide 38. We've already done the analysis of all the soft sites. Those will turn over 2 and 3 times before we actually get to a decision because the speculation will be rampant. This is really difficult. Once you show your hand as a preferred alternative, we have, in a sense, unleashed market forces that we don't control. And we may have a new resource after November, but still our dollars are constrained. Is it your intention, Director Callahan, that if there is a new urban renewal district created, that we would look to boost the percentage of affordable housing similar to what we did previously to something like 45%?
Yes, Commissioner. The present target would be a minimum of 45%. That's the yes. The answer is yes.
So I share Commissioner Fish's concerns. We have adopted anti-displacement measures in our comp plan, and I want to make sure that we're keeping those measures at the forefront of this project. We also have seen time and time again how major transit projects create displacement, which leads to more affluent residents moving into the area who like to drive. Which means more cars on the road and more emissions in the air, and is really counter to our goals here. So I'm very concerned about the huge gap between the number of units we need and the number of units we can currently fund. You mentioned the land that TriMet's going to have to be acquiring mm-hmm. during the development phase. It's my understanding that we don't currently have a commitment from them that we would have first dibs on those properties. That I mean, I think currently they could buy that property, do the project, and then sell it to the highest bidder, thereby profiting from the effects of gentrification and displacement that they're causing. I'm very uncomfortable with that. I would want to guarantee that any property that's suitable for residential development would be set aside for affordable housing, or at least we would have the first crack at it at cost, not at a massive profit to TriMet.
Thank you, Commissioner.
So I have lots of comments. I've lived within a mile of the Barber Transit Center for 32 years now, 5 years south, north of it, and then the rest in PCC, Sylvania. So obviously I've got a lot of input on this particular project. First of all, though, thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you for the work that you've been doing. I know that my colleagues who were on the council in the previous term were adamant that this kind of holistic planning needed to be done for the Barbara Transit corridor, and I'm really pleased at how it is coming together. And that does lead to one of my big picture concerns, which is equity between this and Powell mm-hmm. and East Portland and Division. That when we had the discussion at the Division high capacity transit previously, there were a lot more unknowns in terms of how the housing is going to be provided, how the displacement is going to be avoided, which doesn't mean to say that we shouldn't do it here. We received a letter from the Planning and Sustainability Commission recommending that we don't adopt this strategy unless we're willing to put what I would term boatloads of money into the promise that we were going to put it into this project. And the council is going to need to wrestle with, we don't have two times boatloads of money. And so where are we going? Where is the highest need? And how do we prioritize, or how do we figure out how to pay for both? So I just want to put that on the table. Several of us at the table here were veterans of the Southwest Community Plan, and one of the reasons that there isn't as much development happening in Southwest is because there was a bubble put around Barber and the West Portland Town Centre that wasn't all that much rezoning done in anticipation of a later study. Is the Planning Bureau looking at rezoning in collaboration with this project?
We already actually have received another grant from Metro to continue some of our corridor work, and in the second phase we're focused a little bit more on the zoning question, particularly to embark on a West Portland Town Center plan, essentially, as well as some refinement around the Ross Island Bridgehead as in tandem with that project. But the West Portland Town Center plan, if you will, is a long time coming, as you know, and would be a vehicle to revisit the where we landed with the allowed density in that town center, and we have had to remind partners occasionally that is a town center designation like Hollywood. As well as look at sort of the boundaries of that town center and where the multifamily zoning is.
Right. So I was going to mention the West Portland Town Center. That was the only Metro special area that was asked for by the citizens back in the early 1990s. The four neighborhoods around the Westport, the crossroads, as we call it, asked for it to be designated a town center. It then, when we started talking about what would that look like in terms of rezoning, the neighborhoods north of Barber I-5 were not happy. I think that would be a kind way to put it. And so whereas West Portland Park, which is the neighborhood that I live in, was willing to look at how could we make this more than a McDonald's and an auto car wash and things. So with that in mind, I do think we should do a West Portland Town Center plan. I do think that there's still openness to significant upzoning and great opportunities now that we have a park both south and north within a mile of the town centre. And so I would like to see that prioritised by planning. And at the same time, now would be the time to buy all those properties, because once they're upzoned, they're going to just cost that much more. And so I this corridor is going to be a good place for housing and for transportation, regardless of what it already is. It has, I think, some of the best bus service in Portland, with both the 94, which has only got one stop in the 7 miles from the Barber Transit Center to downtown, one stop, and then also the 12 to stop every few blocks along the way. And so it's a perfect place for more people to be able to live, and we should be rushing ahead with that. So I had a question about the Gibbs Station. It looked like an elevator to a bridge to OHSU. Wouldn't that smack into the Twilliger plan?
So we'll be working our way through all of that. The other alternative to try to provide a non-motorized connection up to Markham Hill is a tunnel, which actually has a large amount of impact. One wouldn't think so, but there are... there's a great deal of tree removal and elements that need to happen. So those are the two ways that we've identified. We have a lot of process to do around what that connection actually looks like, and we know we have the Twilliger plan and our own design commission and a great deal of work to do.
Yeah, I know that Commissioner Saltzman and I are still a little bit in PTSD from the tram and all the controversy on that. So if you are looking at things that are likely to hold this up and make it really, really challenging to get done, that one sticks out to me.
You know, the one thing that I tend to think about with that place is with that connection is that if we are able to do it well, what a wonderful resource for people to come enjoy the Terwilliger Parkway when they have access more regionally, really, from a transit system to be able to get up to that place and enjoy it. It could be a good thing.
Just flagging it for you.
Thank you.
I called it.
I appreciate it.
So noted.
How much displacement? I mean, condemnation. Are we thinking of doing? I mean, you mentioned a transit station at 53rd. There isn't any public land there at the moment, so we would be looking to buy whether people want to sell or not. And do we know? Do we have any information on how many properties might be impacted, both there and at Ross
Island? I can get you some more information in that. The DEIS that's this thick, let me pull that for you.
Yeah.
And really some of this, it'll be very helpful for us to know what sorts of information we can bring to you over the next couple of weeks as we head towards those council sessions. So noted.
So that would be one both at 53rd and at the Ross Island. And maybe part of the strategy should be if your land is being condemned, you get first dibs on X, whatever that might be.
I will say one of the interesting things about NATO itself as it relates to Ross Island is it appears that we can build completely within the old highway right-of-way if we are just rebuilding a road. It was light rail, which widens things, that was going to push us outside and into the historic neighborhood. So that is a factoid that I think I've got. But let me get that information for you.
Okay.
Thank you.
I was pleased to hear the decision points about the transfer of Barber. Again, thinking about Powell, 82nd, all these streets that we said, gosh, we'd like to take them, but you have to fix them up first. And ODOT says no. So I agree that we would only take Barber if it's... And that would be sidewalks from downtown to Tigard.
So it would be sidewalks downtown to where Barber Transit Center is. Currently, the initial transfer is that section of Barber. So that's where the road's being rebuilt. You will see when the jurisdictional transfer comes to you that it contemplates us taking the next section from Barber Transit Center down to 53rd, and we would be doing that in the context of a conversation with ODOT about what sorts of improvements are needed. Sidewalks certainly being an important part of that.
The light rail is adjacent there and not on Barber itself, so we don't have the funding yet to improve that segment.
That's really problematic, though.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't be taking jurisdiction of Barber beyond the transit center?
That's correct.
Okay.
Not yet.
Is it contemplated to continue to have a park and ride at the Barber Transit Center?
Yes.
So there will be parking. That's good. And let me just... Oh, I have a suggestion for funding, potentially, our FAR sales.
Excellent.
The floor area ratio sales that, although there isn't floor area ratio on most ODOT properties, there is on some of them are actually lots, we've come to find out, as where Right to Dream 2 are right now. So there may be some opportunity to get not all the funding, but some of it.
Thank you.
We might have it all figured out in 10 years. I just wanted to emphasize about the Westport Town Center, and that is the area that has been culturally diverse since I've lived there. When my daughter, who's now in law school, was in second grade, there were kids who had been born in 13 different countries in her class, and that was before the class sizes went over 30. So it has the two mosques in Portland, or had the two original mosques in Portland. It's the only Title I, Markham Elementary is the only Title I school on the west side. So it's this amazingly rich cultural environment, and we need to really plan thoughtfully to make sure that it stays that way. And part of that is in the prevent displacement. We only have housing displacement. We need to be looking after the businesses, particularly Barber Foods, because the area doesn't have... The Barber Transit Center doesn't have what we call a full-service grocery store. It does have Barber Foods, which has all of the everything, fresh vegetables and such, that both I and people from the Middle East and elsewhere want to buy. And so I'm very concerned about the proposal to take... one of the alternatives is to basically cross from the Barber Transit Center, obliterate Barber Foods, go on to Taylor's Ferry, and come back again. That doesn't seem to... I don't think that makes any sense whatsoever.
I would agree. The evaluation we were looking at didn't actually touch Barber World Foods.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I still think, again, flagging issues that are going to be hugely controversial, and I wouldn't go there, don't go north of Barber. I think it's we will have the same kinds of opposition that we had before, and we have a way to get to yes with a lot of creative new development if we can avoid the mistakes that we made in the mid-1990s.
Under your under housing, the key findings for the Southwest Corridor, number six, says there's 327 older, unregulated, affordable apartment buildings in the corridor containing over 11,000 apartments. And since 2006, these older buildings accounted for 90%, 94%.